Hi, my name's Maya.
And I'm Jada.
We're both sophomores at Mount Pleasant High School, and we're here today to talk about alternative schools.
We're both inner-city kids. We've seen firsthand how many of our classmates from elementary to middle and now high school end up in alternative schools.
But we've never been to one, so we wanted to investigate how students end up there, what the environment is like, and if they change students for better or for worse.
This is Jada again. Most of my friends who've been to alternative schools don't necessarily see them as bad. They said that they're jumping, fun, exciting. Basically, they feel like they can get away with anything.
This is Maya. I've only lived in Delaware for a few years, but it didn't take me long to become familiar with the Wilmington area. It's a very small, tight-knit city. There's an energy here, and it's like all the kids feed off of each other. If someone sees a friend getting shipped off to an alternative school, they want to go too, because they're sort of a family dynamic. Setting our own preconceived notions aside, we decided to call up the State Department of Education to ask them how alternative schools in Delaware work. We talked to John Sadowski, who's in charge of discipline.
So alternative placement is for students that have, it's primarily for chronic and repetitive disciplinary issues within the regular school setting, although it can be for more severe one-time incidents. As well.
Alternative schools determine how long the student's placement may last, ranging anywhere from 30 to 90 days based on academics, attendance, and behavior.
Those are the three biggies. If you're making like outstanding progress, we'll kind of do a reevaluation at that point and see if we can transition you back earlier.
And while Delaware school districts are able to establish their own codes of conduct, Sadowski says they are very similar. But not every district has its own alternative school.
What we have is the legislation that created this years ago said that each of the county school districts could come together and form a consortium rather than providing this individual programming in their schools and to kind of scale it where it's cheaper to provide that service by combining forces. So that's what all the counties have done.
But we're not sure the cheapest option is the best, and we have our doubts about how well alternative schools are working. So, we talked to Malik Muhammad, head of Parkway Schools.
Our mission is to serve and transform young people.
One of the mental health methods he says Parkway has adopted is the restorative practice method.
Which is a model that's designed to build relationships, to have a balance between control and challenge. And holding people accountable also with a heavy dose of support.
Muhammad says their statistics are proof that the method is working.
97% in various years, but around 97% of the students that come to a Parkway school have fewer days of out-of-school suspension than when they did when they're in their traditional environment.
But he also says just because things are good inside the school doesn't mean things are good outside of school.
I'm bothered by the number of students across the board at Parkway or otherwise that we lose to homicide every year. So what bothers me and something that I think we need to look at is across the board, all schools in Newcastle County, public schools, alternative schools, et cetera, how many young men, especially young men of color, black and Latino boys, are being killed. I think that needs to be a measure of our success as well.
Dr. Kim Allen, director of Brandywine Community School, an alternative school serving Brandywine School District students, has firsthand experience with how guns impact students in the school environment.
We do talk about consequences all the time, though, and I think that's really important that somebody really say, do you know what the consequence of you doing this could mean? We've had a young middle school boy hanging out with some older boys, and they were in the, park, and a police car rolled up, and the older boy said, oh, just hold this. And the younger boy thought it was just a play gun or something. And of course, he got stuck with the gun. And, unfortunately, but one of the nice things we do, we have relationships with the courts. We will go to the courts if we have to. I will go to the court personally and try to speak on behalf of a student. And I think that's one of the pluses that we can do as a program that schools just don't have the time to do. I know they would do it, but we're fortunate, and I feel very blessed that we can do it and make a difference for students.
Dr. Allen says trauma plays a huge role in the performance of students, not only academically, but also behaviorally.
Nowadays, trauma is very big in the schools, and our children are dealing with a lot of trauma. But unfortunately, as we find, a lot of times schools aren't aware of this because they're so large that a student has seen a parent shot, a family that's homeless, a family that's had to move as a result of violence in the community.
She recalls a heartbreaking moment working with a student who's experienced trauma.
One of the saddest situations I ever had was I had a young lady who came to us and told us that she had a stepfather or her mother's boyfriend that was physically abusing her. And she really didn't want to tell her mom because her mom was happy. And it just cut me to my core, you know. And she said, you know, my mom's not ever been this happy, and I don't want to be the one to tell this. And I said to her, you know, we're mandated reporters. We have to report. She said, well, will you talk to my mom with me? We said, of course we will. And, you know, obviously we proceeded with that. But those are the things that I won't say that they, obviously they're very, you know, troubling, but I'm happy that we're there, that we can catch that. Because if not, you know, a young lady like that in a big school could be lost with something like that.
She says the school focuses on parent involvement as a necessary component of student wellness.
But the good news, I think, for us is we can meet with our families. Families must meet with us. We have an intake where parents must attend. We go out to homes. We have home visits. We have family nights. We do what we can to encourage family interaction and support for that family. And not just the student that's in our school, but for the entire family.
Sometimes, despite all the support, it just isn't enough.
We certainly have students that return. I mean, there are some students that it can be due to family circumstance. It can be due to things in the community. There are a lot of things out of our control. The saddest things are when I have to go to a service or something for a student that, you know, may have gotten caught up in something in the community. And, you know, we just wish we had have been there.
We talked to Mr. Simmons, a teacher here at Mount Pleasant, who identifies the types of students who are more likely to be sent to an alternative school.
Normally the kids who have lower test grades or poor academics are the ones who go to the alternative school. And from what the data shows, that's normally kids from what we could consider, quote unquote, lesser backgrounds.
Simmons says that some students are unmotivated and their placement has nothing to do with teacher qualifications or the relationships teachers establish with their students.
What else do you want them to do? Sometimes there is nothing that they can really do because the student is hell-bent on going in the direction that they want to be in. As much as I don't like to say it, but there is a need for kids who cannot conform to the behavior requirements of an academic environment need to be placed in an alternative setting so that the others can be successful.
However, he understands that when a student does go to an alternative school, it can hurt them academically.
I do know that kids who come from an alternative program or if they go to an alternative school and come back are normally behind. So obviously it's not adequate because those kids aren't in the same place that they would be if they were in a regular school.
We also spoke to Ms. Jeter, a paraeducator here at Mount Pleasant. She was previously employed at Brandywine Community School. While she couldn't speak for all alternative schools, she was confident in her old school's success. But she felt the same way Simmons did about the transition from alternative back to regular school.
The only drawback or con, I would say, is that sometimes students lose a lot while they're there. When it comes, once they return back to school in their academic setting, they lose that skill of this is what it means to be a student in a large population of students.
A lot of the students Jeter works with at Mount are kids she established relationships with while working at the Brandywine Community School.
One student in particular, like even though like the staff may see him as disrespectful to them, he still greets me with, hey, Ms. Jeter, what's up? And I get where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. And I can redirect him without getting cursed out.
Jeter said this student in particular has come a long way. While he's still getting in trouble at the high school level, at least he knows what his triggers are. Ms. Jeter says he was missing discipline at home and wasn't used to being held accountable for his actions and had the consequences attached to them in the school setting. She says getting him acclimated to that now is a work in progress.
Throughout the process of reporting on alternative schools, we learned that people will only talk about what they're comfortable with. We reached out to Parkway Academy and the Brandywine Community School in an effort to add a student's perspective, but we weren't given access. We also talked to counselors at our own school to see if any current students who've been through alternative schools would be willing to talk to us. They weren't. Even some adults didn't feel comfortable answering all questions. Some, like Mr. Simmons, were more candid about their opinions of alternative schools. He has serious concerns about grouping kids with similar behavior issues together at the same alternative school.
It's almost like incarceration in a sense. You know how they say incarceration doesn't rehabilitate criminals, it just makes better criminals? That's my feeling. Kids learn tricks from other kids who are getting in trouble. They have more deep conversations because they spend more time with other kids who get in trouble, which, you know, increases their practice. They learn how to get away with things. They do more things.
We learned that there are many components that factor into an alternative school success. It's sort of like baking a cake. If you don't have all of your ingredients, it's not going to turn out right. Some of the key factors include teacher training, family involvement, mental health interventions, and teacher-student relationships. Mr. Simmons feels there's a way to prevent kids from ending up in alternative schools in the first place, and we agree. We definitely feel that there needs to be a greater emphasis on early intervention so that we can prevent future generations of students from cycling through alternative schools.
I really believe that if we can educate these kids before they get to third grade, I think that would eliminate a lot of the issues that they have once they get to middle school and high school.
While we don't have enough information to declare all alternative schools in Delaware a success or failure, we do know that we need to start changing the community stigma surrounding alternative schools.
Schools should be safe places where students aren't afraid to ask for help. And unfortunately, intervention now doesn't come until they've already started to drift down the wrong path.
For Generation Voice, I'm Maya.
For Generation Voice, I'm Jada.